20 years. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we of WHAS observe an anniversary, a milestone in our history. For it was 20 years ago in July 1922, back in the days when radio meant headphones and crystals, cat whiskers and tuning coils, that these words first were heard.
This is WHAS, the radio telephone broadcasting station of the Courier Journal and the Louisville Times in Louisville, Kentucky.
And that was the voice that uttered them. That memorable night in 1922, when WHAS gave forth its first infant cry. Tonight, two decades later, we are here not to look to the future, as is ever the aim in radio, but rather to look to the past, to review all too briefly the accomplishments of these past 20 years.
But how did this begin? How did this creation of a radio station come about?
For that, let us go back to the month of May in 1922. In his office, Judge Robert Worth Bingham, publisher of the Courier Journal and the Louisville Times, is dictating a letter addressed to his friend and fellow worker in the past, Credo Harris.
I intend to erect a broadcasting plant that will carry religious consolation, entertainment, and a wide knowledge of world affairs to Kentuckians and our Indiana neighbors. Especially to those unfortunates who are shut in, the sick, the blind, the paralyzed. It must be a radio station which, above all else, is built on character and conducted with unvarying good taste. I am hoping that you will direct it for me, because we see eye to eye.
Such was the charge delivered to Credo Harris by Judge Bingham. How well that charge has been fulfilled is apparent to all who know the WHAS of today, who have followed its achievements during these 20 years. And time forbids that we tell them all here, nor can we mention all the many whose efforts have gone into building the WHAS of today. For, as we in radio know only too well, time is a precious commodity. And so only the highlight events can claim our attention now as we scan these 20 years.
July 18th, 1922.
WHAS, one of the pioneer radio stations of America, went on the air with a staff of three people.
Note that, three people. Today the staff comprises nearly 100.
A schedule of 2.5 hours a day on the air.
2.5 hours. Today it's 19 hours a day. 24 when public service so demands.
And a power of 500 watts.
Just 1/100th of today's 50,000 watts.
Truly those were pioneer days. A burlap padded studio, transmitter and studio controls, and an office for the use of the three people who made up the entire staff of WHAS. Credo Harris, manager, Emmett Graft, engineer, and a secretary, Dorothy Kirchhoff. All three still with us today.
Those were the days when Gallagher and Sheen were the sensation of New York, when the toddle was the latest dance step, and a few brave people were pioneering in the complexities of a Chinese game called Mahjong.
But WHAS was pioneering, too, in things that today are accepted as everyday occurrences. On September 2nd, WHAS pioneered the first remote broadcast, bringing organ music over telephone wires from the Alamo Theater.
And on October 4th came the first WHAS broadcast of a baseball game, based on wire reports of the World Series between the Giants and the Yanks.
If you're interested, the Giants won 3-2 and took the series 4-0. One was tied.
...1923 rolled by, and then came 1924.
And as radio grew, so too did WHAS. Highlights of 1924 included the broadcast of a telephone conversation between Credo Harris in Louisville and Mary Pickford in New York, an unheard-of innovation in those days.
Yet a forecast of the 2, 3, and 5 or 6-way pickups that are so frequently used in our newscasts of today.
On July 19th, 1924, when WHAS was 2 years and 1 day old, engineers succeeded in picking up broadcast signals from the WHAS transmitter far underground in the depths of Mammoth Cave.
A tablet at that subterranean spot marks the site of this, another WHAS first.
And it was on November 24th, just about the time Newt Rockne and the famed Four Horsemen were making football history at Notre Dame, that a letter was received reporting reception of WHAS, still only a 500 watter, in London, England.
...1925 was an important year in many ways. That was the year that all electric sets began to replace the old receivers with their cabinets full of batteries, or crystal sets and headphones. The famous Scopes trial was held in Dayton, Tennessee, and the eyes of the world turned to Sand Cave, Kentucky, where Floyd Collins was trapped in a newly explored cavern.
WHAS broadcast hourly bulletins on the progress of rescue work, as reported by Skeets Miller, later to become an executive of NBC. That same year, a two-way conversation with a plane in flight was broadcast for the first time by WHAS.
But perhaps the most interesting broadcast of that year took place on May 16th, when Credo Harris and Emmett Graft climbed to the lofty cupola at Churchill Downs to bring to the listening public for the first time a word picture of the thrills and color of Kentucky's greatest racing classic, as Flying Ebony with Earl Sandy up won the 51st running of the Kentucky Derby. ...1926, the year Rudolph Valentino died, and Washington, seeing the need for regulation of the many radio stations springing up all over the country, saw fit to establish the Federal Radio Commission. 1926 brought a continued parade of personalities and events carried to the ears of a waiting people through the medium of WHAS.
The visit to Kentucky of Queen Marie of Romania, the Dempsey-Tunney fight in Philadelphia, and our first broadcast from Lexington, the performance of an oratorio there.
And 1926 saw the completion of negotiations between Credo Harris and George McClelland of NBC, whereby WHAS became the first of the southern stations to be affiliated with the nation's first radio network.
These negotiations were unique in that they were carried on entirely by telephone. And from that date until the time 5 years later when WHAS joined the Columbia Broadcasting System, NBC and WHAS operated as affiliates, without contract of any kind. Only a gentleman's agreement between George McClelland and Credo Harris.
January 4th, 1927, was the date of the first NBC program carried over WHAS. It was
one of radio's earliest features, the well-remembered Ever Ready Hour.
Time rolled on. May 20th, 1927, WHAS brought news of Lindbergh's epoch-making flight to Paris. And a month later, the Lone Eagle himself appeared before WHAS microphones.
In passing, we might note that that was the year Al Jolson was making movie history with The Jazz Singer. Henry Ford unveiled his long-awaited Model A. And Major Andrew White organized 16 stations into the Columbia Network.
Then came 1928.
For the first time, the WHAS broadcast of the Kentucky Derby with Credo Harris at the microphone was heard over the NBC network, coast to coast.
But of far more reaching importance is the event we're coming to now. Listen.
For 6 years, WHAS had operated from the roof of the Courier-Journal building, its transmitter, a baby judged by present standards, putting out its 500-watt signal from an antenna stretched between the two towers still standing on the roof of this building today. Reminders of those days when radio moved with giant strides.
But on November 11th, 1928, 10 years after the armistice of the First World War, WHAS put into service a new transmitter located near Jeffersontown and moved into new and enlarged studios. The power was increased tenfold to 5,000 watts, and facilities for preparation and presentation of programs increased by many fold.
Yes, those were happy days, those prosperous years. Boom years, 1928 and early 1929.
On April 7th, WHAS pioneered again, cooperating in the establishment of radio studios in the University of Kentucky in Lexington.
Since that date, daily programs have come from the university to bring enlightenment from a great educational institution to all within listening radius.
And on June 1st of 1929, Lee Colson, later to become commercial manager, then executive manager, joined the WHAS family to aid assistant manager Martin Campbell in the expanding commercial activities of this radio station, now grown to a point where it could stand on its own feet and begin to pay its own way as it served its far-flung family of listeners.
October 1st
brought to Louisville the National Convention of the American Legion.
And a 6.5-hour broadcast in which the facilities of WHAS were open to the musical units, bands, and drum and bugle corps that came to the convention to compete for fame and glory as the largest or the loudest, the snappiest or the oldest in the ranks of the Legionnaires. That is only of passing interest, but one we do remember. For with an outfit from Omaha came a personable young man by name Joe Eaton. The Bugle Corps left, but Joe Eaton stayed to become one of the voices that made of WHAS the friend of countless listeners. The same Joe Eaton that later took over the reins as program director and now heads the commercial department of WHAS.
...1929 went its way, as years must come and go. It's passing not regretted by those who felt the October crash.
Then 1930. As we pause only to note that this was the year that Barry Bingham, to whom has passed the work and the ideals to fulfill of his father, Judge Bingham, spent in working and learning, as all of us have done, the duties and problems of any radio station, and more particularly, our own WHAS.
1931. WHAS operated with its first 6 months license granted by the Federal Radio Commission. Amos and Andy were a national habit. Kate Smith was singing the moon over the mountain. Henry Ford produced the 20 millionth struggle buggy, as the gay young men of the time called their autos.
And then came 1932, the year of the Lindbergh kidnapping, and the year we neared the depths of economic depression. Double feature movies began, and a man named Roosevelt ran for president.
A momentous year for us all. On May 15th, WHAS completed over 5 years affiliation with NBC and began an alliance with the up-and-coming Columbia Broadcasting System to bring its listeners the best of radio entertainment.
On October 4th, power was increased to 25 kilowatts.
Only half of today's power, but 50 times the might of the infant of July 18th, 1922.
And November 1st saw the inaugural of daily weekday broadcasts from Asbury College,
of which you will hear more later. A great year, 1932, but we must hurry on to 1933.
The year Judge Bingham was appointed ambassador to the Court of St. James. Listening centers were established in remote mountain communities in Kentucky.
Roosevelt, the bank holiday, fireside chats, and 3.2 beer were chief topics of conversation.
And then on Sunday morning, December 3rd, without fanfare or publicity,
WHAS increased its power to 50,000 watts.
That the public interest, convenience, and necessity might be better served.
The years rolled on. 1934, the year that saw the birth of a fourth national network, the Mutual Broadcasting System, operating on a plan in which WHAS had pioneered 2 years before.
Then 1935, the year swing came into its own. Will Rogers met his tragic end, and WHAS originated the first broadcast ever to come to the world from deep down under the earth, 2 miles from daylight in the caverns of Mammoth Cave.
Came 1936, bringing to Louisville and WHAS Mark Etheridge, new then to radio, but later to head the National Association of Broadcasters. And then, 1937.
A a year to be remembered by us all. It began as a cold and bleak year, rain and snow and fog. Chill and damp was that fateful January. More snow, then rain, pelting down to melt the blanket of dirty white. Pour it into already swollen creeks and rivers. Still no let-up as the rain came down and down.
Flood stage at Parkersburg. Flood stage at Cincinnati. River rising at Carrollton. Flood stage expected by tomorrow. Residents of low-lying areas are advised to move to higher ground immediately. Flood stage in Louisville expected Sunday or Monday, unless rain abates.
Flood. Murky fingers of soiled yellow water. Grim, relentless fingers, reaching out to entwine and tangle and grasp and destroy the puny beings who dare oppose its might. Flood. The worst flood in the history of the Ohio Valley. And in the studios of WHAS,
send a boat, four persons and sick child at 2210 West Market Street. All persons are asked to stay away from flood areas to avoid interfering with rescue workers. Attention, boat station number 2, supply of typhoid vaccine is on its way to you. Meet messenger and take same to temporary hospital at Garland School. Family with no food or heat at 2992 Broadway. Send a boat.
Ceaselessly, tired but never giving in, the voices of WHAS went on. In dark and frigid studios, lit by candles and lanterns, warmed ever so slightly by oil stoves that filled the air with their throat-catching fumes, the work went on. 37 telephones, manned by staff and volunteers, taking messages, relaying instructions, constantly directing a stream of messages, encouragement, advice, instruction, direction, yes, and prayer to those fighting the worst disaster of our times, the 1937 flood. When power failed, carrying on through the transmitter of Good Neighbor WSM, cutting corners, using makeshift means, but getting out the messages, handling the news, keeping up morale, bringing aid from the entire nation. That was the job of WHAS. And when we say WHAS, we mean every man and woman who worked with us then. Staff, yes, and volunteers. From newsroom and press room of our parent papers, from Barry Bingham to building quarters. Helpers, too, from the outside. But what did all this mean to the outside world?
A bronze medal awarded by the Columbia Broadcasting System for distinguished contribution to radio. A scroll of honor from Broadcasting Magazine. A tribute from the broadcasting stations of Georgia. A bronze plaque from Variety. Awards to Lee Colson and Joe Eaton from the National Headliners Club.
But what did it mean to the men and women who, day and night, for hours on end, labored that the service might not fail, that sickness might be averted, and lives might be saved? Only this did it mean.
A job we had to do.
A job well done.
Our tribute.
The unspoken thanks of those whose help we were. We might go on and on, but in the memory of all of us, the things that remain are very clear. Growth in size, in quality of service, in acceptance by those whom we seek to serve.
Late in 1937, new studios were dedicated, the last word in equipment and design. In 1938, the new transmitter and vertical radiator at Eastwood were put into service, supplicating the old but faithful equipment at Jeffersontown. Orrin Towner came to install the new transmitter, of which he was co-designer, and remained chief engineer of the rapidly growing WHAS.
That same year began the expansion of programming and production under supervision of program director Robert Kennett, which brought WHAS programs to a new high level of entertainment and service value. Newscasts were increased and given established spots. Sports and special events received added emphasis, and musical programs reached a new high in quality.
These advances continued year by year. New faces came into the WHAS family to work side by side with those who had been with us from the beginning. Horizons were widened, activities grew by leaps and bounds. An agricultural department was established. WHAS became even better known to the nation, feeding programs of every type from coast to coast. And then, in 1940...
rumblings of war.
As always, when its services are needed, the facilities of WHAS were available whenever requested by those agencies active in our national defense. Operation 24 hours a day when news warranted it. Announcements, programs, by and on behalf of the armed forces, the Red Cross, the Treasury and its war bond drive, the OPM, the OPA, to mention only a few.
Then came December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor, and the United States at war.
Immediately, operations at WHAS were put on a war footing. Precautions to guard against unauthorized use of radio facilities, protection of studios and transmitter, and a constant alert lest anything be said or done that might give aid or comfort to the enemy.
No letdown in program structure, though.
Rather an increase in every effort to awaken national consciousness, to bolster morale, and keep the public informed.
With first call given to messages and broadcasts from our government to the people.
Carrying out the charge of 20 years before, that this radio station should bring to all people those things which are their need and their desire, that their interest, convenience, and necessity might be served by means of this inanimate creation, WHAS, made a vital force in character by those who built it, directed it, and carried on its activities during these 20 years. So much for the bare history of WHAS. Much has been left unsaid, but let it suffice that it is not the events themselves, but the results achieved that really count. What are the things called for by Judge Bingham in founding this station 20 years ago? A plant to bring to the people religious consolation, entertainment, and knowledge. Now, what has been achieved?
In religion, daily broadcasts from Asbury College in Wilmore, Kentucky, establishing a family altar, interdenominational in character, and spreading through word and song the message and comfort of faith and devotion. A church service from our studios every Sunday, and a devotional period daily throughout the week conducted by ministers of every faith. These in cooperation with the Louisville Council of Churches. A weekend service of meditation conducted by Dr. Charles W. Welsh, former moderator of the Presbyterian Church of America. Regular broadcasts have been conducted by members of the Catholic faith and the Jewish. Truly, it may be said that WHAS has ever cooperated to bring to those who cannot find it elsewhere the comfort and help of religious faith.
What about education and information?
WHAS has always recognized its obligation to the educational institutions. As facilities expanded, so did the scope and form of its educational service enlarge. First local school broadcasts, later to be supplanted by programs of wider application. Since 1929, daily programs of information, culture, and entertainment, too, have been broadcast from the University of Kentucky. Weekly programs of outstanding quality have come from the University of Louisville under the guidance of Dr. Raymond Kent and from the University of Indiana and many programs from other institutions throughout the state.
For the farmer, no series can have meant more than the daily talks presented by the College of Agriculture of the University of Kentucky under Dean Cooper and conducted by Elsie Brewer. And 2 years ago, WHAS set up its own agricultural department to add to its service in rural areas, cooperating with state, county, and other agricultural organizations in Kentucky and Indiana to bring information and guidance to the farms of this area.
In civic matters, WHAS microphones are open to all qualified persons or organizations who have matters of importance to discuss. They are ever at the service of our nation's armed forces. Weekly programs are broadcast from Fort Knox, from Camp Shelby, and from the air base at Bowman Field.
And what of the service to mountain areas?
Cooperating with the University of Kentucky, WHAS assisted in the establishment of listening centers in remote cabins and isolated mountain communities, locations reached only by muleback over tortuous mountain trails. People cut off from regular channels of news and communication and the other benefits that, by us, are taken for granted. Radio receivers were installed and maintained in these remote centers. where folk from miles around can come to listen regularly to programs of news, information, and cultural interest, and join in discussion groups conducted by trained leaders at these listening centers. Only the magic of radio and this pioneer activity by WHAS and Kentucky State University could have made such a thing possible.
We could go on further, but time is pressing. Tonight we have looked at the past, reviewing a good job well done, following the precepts laid down by Judge Bingham, and so faithfully carried out under the guidance of Credo Harris. Now, what of the future? Need we say more than this? That the record of the past 20 years will be continued as we pledge ourselves to the furtherance of that cardinal code of all broadcasters, that the public interest, convenience, and necessity may best be served. That is ever the aim of we who are WHAS, radio station of the Courier-Journal and the Louisville Times.